up happier than ever? No way. He doesn't get to win.
Whoever is bitten by a werewolf and lives becomes a werewolf himself.
The census taker once tried to test me. I ate his liver with some fava beans and a nice Chianti.
Gina! But I don't care, darling. Because I love you. You've got to let me eat your brother.
Why do you eat people?
Not people. Brains. I can feel myself rot.
Sid, don't you blame the movies. Movies don't create psychos. Movies make psychos more creative.
Wheel in. Wheel. Wheel. Ladder.
Do you go out with friends?
Well, a boy's best friend is his mother.
Hello, welcome once again to Dark Discussions, your place of discussion of horror, film, fiction, and all that's fantastic. So basically, we discuss Blu-rays and indie films, main releases, all sorts of stuff, but mostly genre stuff and quirky stuff. And today we are here to do another film, but before we get into that, where can people find us? Well, we are actually part of the Dark Discussions Podcast Network, or Dark Discussions Network, which is www.darkdiscussions.com. You can find us there and play all our interviews and episodes and all that right off the website, or you can find us on Stitcher, iTunes, Google Play, Apple, iHeartRadio, you know, wherever podcasts are found, basically. Also, you can email us at darkdiscussions@aol.com or just press the contact us form on the website. The website is it's there all the time, but it's updated daily, and it has many articles, reviews, columns, critiques, podcasts, audio, video, all sorts of stuff. So basically, if you like genre news, so that would be horror, sci-fi, fantasy, thrillers, techno thrillers, mystery, grindhouse, art house, science fiction, and the like, that should be one of your places that you come to daily, because it's updated daily with all sorts of news. Also, you can find us on Twitter at Dark Discussion 1 and on Facebook, which is Dark Discussions Podcast Facebook group, where you can join in the discussion. We have all sorts of things going on there, talking about Wonder Woman, the new film. We're talking about the remake of The Changeling and Scream 5, all the sorts of stuff people are talking about on the website, or I should say the Facebook group, and you can either join in the conversation or start up your own. Let's see. I am one of your co-hosts, Philip, from the state of New Hampshire in the U.S. of A., and with me in the Commonwealth of Virginia.
Hey, this is Barrett.
Barrett, how's it going, my friend?
It's going well.
Excellent. For folks who are curious, we are recording this on December 29th, 2020. So, 2 days before the New Year, or New Year's Eve, I should say. And this will be probably our last recording of the year before we start in January again. And that is, again, only 3 days away. So let's see. I guess we can discuss any little news or anything. Do you have any news or anything that you wanted to bring up, Barrett? I'm not sure if there was something that caught your eye and you felt like discussing before we get into our topic tonight.
Nothing in the news related, but I am watching a show called The Expanse. I've been watching it for many seasons, and the new season has started. They're about at episode 4 now, and it's a really good season.
And that is located on what station now? Because it originally was Sci-Fi the first 3 seasons, I think.
Yeah, it was bought by Amazon, and they're going to do one more season, which will wrap it up at 6.
And is Amazon, you're saying, unlike some of their shows, they're not dropping all the episodes at once. They're just doing similar now to what they did with Boys Season 2, which is one episode at a time.
Yeah, I'm not sure, because I caught it at episode 4, so I don't know if they dropped like 3 or 4 at first, but I got to 4, and it was a huge cliffhanger, and then I didn't have any more to watch, and I was like, oh, I should have known.
yeah, I know. For some reason now, the hip thing is to go back to weekly episodes now, rather than just drop everything all at once, but that's good that you're enjoying it, though, because I've heard a lot of good things about it. For folks who are curious, it's a hard science fiction television series that takes place out in deep space, right?
Yeah. Well, it takes place on Earth and in deep space, but all in our, well, I won't say all, mostly in our galaxy. And it is based on a series of books that are really, really well done as well. I think they're on book 9 right now. And from what I hear, it's ending at season 6, because in the books there's a 30-year time jump, and it would be hard to age the actors 30 years. So it looks like they're going to wrap it up at season 6.
Who's the author of the novels?
Is it James Corey, James S.A. Corey, something like that? Let me look real quick. Just I got it close, but I'm not positive.
Now, have you read any of these books as you're looking it up?
The first 4 or 5, and I really, really enjoyed them. Yeah, it's James S.A. Corey.
Nice. And now, are these normal size books, you know, like 200 to 300 pages or something like that? Or are they?
I'd say they're good 400 to 500. So they're not.
These are big books.
Sure. Yeah, they're really good, though. Really, really good books.
Nice.
And the show is pretty much just as good as the books. You know, they have to make some sacrifices and change some things, but they stay pretty true to the story.
Nice. That's good. Yeah. That's good. Yeah. Excellent. All right. Sounds good. So folks could check that out on Amazon Prime, where I guess they have all 4 of the original seasons on there, right?
Yep. They have everything. So, yeah, when they bought it, they got it all from Sci-Fi.
The Sci-Fi Network, right?
And I think, you know, Sci-Fi probably couldn't do it anymore because it was just too expensive. They, you know, they do some shows with some big budgets, but, you know, as they get closer to season 5, most everything ends right around then anyway for them, so.
Sure. And as we know, Amazon is one of the wealthiest companies in the world, got wealthier during the COVID while every small business got destroyed. And as we know, Amazon rules the world, so that they don't have to worry about the money like Sci-Fi. All right, so I guess we can get into our topic tonight. So we're going to talk about a new film. So let's introduce it first before we get into some of the stuff. But let's go with you, Bear. What is this topic?
We are going to be talking about Army of One.
What brings you two to this little community?
We're just traveling, getting away from work.
Hello?
Looks like it's just us. Dylan?
We need to get the hell out of here. Who sent you?
Let's go, Megan!
Thought you were dead.
Pack it up, boys.
She's here. The Army girl.
Today's yours.
Give the little wiki on it if you want.
Yeah, go right ahead, please.
Out hiking, Special Forces Brenner Baker stumbles onto a cartel's compound. Her husband's killed and she's left for dead. The cartel made two mistakes, killing her husband and leaving her alive. They won't live to make another.
Yeah, that is kind of unfortunate, Wiki, because it tells a big thing that happens within 20 minutes into the film, which is the husband dying, right?
Yeah, and yeah. It's not really a cartel, I wouldn't say.
Yeah, I think it's kind of more of like gun runners or something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I wouldn't call them a cartel.
It's and they're moonshiners too. Yeah, they're doing illegal booze and maybe guns too, but I don't know if they're cartel. Yeah. So, but all right. So it's kind of a flawed IMDb wiki type thing, but I guess the general idea. But yeah, either way, the film is directed by Stephen Durham. Stephen Durham. He's a veteran director. He's done a number of things, specifically producing, to be honest. He's done a lot of production. But some of his other credits include writing. And he's done a film called Death Factory, which was a 2014 film and the like. I guess we can get into the other folks behind the film. And that would be... the writers, Mary Ann Barnes, David Dittlinger, and also Stephen Durham participated in the writing credits, and then Ellen Holman did some rewriting of some of the parts that she's in, and I'll bring that up in a second. The film stars Ellen Holman as Brenner, Matt Passmore as Dylan, her husband. And then we have Geraldine Singer, as well as Gary Kaspar and Kendra Corelli, among others. This would be considered most certainly a thriller and action film as well. Before we continue, interesting thing tonight's episode, we do have Ellen Holman, the star of the movie, as a special guest for an interview that we have. We recorded a couple of nights ago, actually last week, right before Christmas, the 23rd, I think it was. And she was nice enough to take some time out of her busy schedule, especially during the holiday season, to come on the podcast and answer some of the questions that maybe a lot of the listeners would be really interested in. And so that was kind of her to do that. And she actually talks about some of the stuff about how some of the rewriting by her of her lines, her own stunts and all that. So that'll be interesting. We'll bring that interview up after our critique and review of the film. But for folks who are curious about Ellen Holman, the star of the film, she's actually... been in a number of interesting genre pieces. One of the films that I actually reviewed a few years ago with another podcast on the network called the Dark Discussions Podcast was a film called The Secrets of Emily Blair, which is a pretty good horror film from 2016 that just actually left Netflix early December 2020, so just a couple of weeks ago. It had been there since 2016 as a Netflix original. That was unfortunate that movie's gone, because everybody should check that out. But she's also, the big thing is that she's going to be in The Matrix 4 as one of the co-stars, along with Keanu Reeves, which is coming out on December 23rd of 2020. One, I believe, or 21st. It's basically the last week of December or so, and that's going to be a big Christmas movie. And she talks a little bit about that, as well as working with the directors of that film. Folks should definitely continue listening and wait for the interview with Ellen. So I guess we can get into how we heard about this film, Barrett, and what we thought about it. So why don't you start?
I heard about it from you, so we decided to watch, and I gave it a watch, and I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a fun action slash revenge flick, thriller as well, a kind of role that, you know, back in the 80s would have gone to, you know, a male star, but now we've got, you know, women in the lead, and I really like that, and it really was really good in this movie. Ellen was awesome.
All right, very good. Yeah, I actually heard about the film from a release notice that actually popped up on the Dark Discussions Network website, so www.darkdiscussions.com, and I saw it there, and I said, oh, that looks pretty interesting, and I had known Ellen, again, from The Secrets of Emily Blair, so she was always someone on the list of folks that I'm always watching out for, so, you know, various directors, writers, or actors or actresses that appeal to me because of some of the films they've been in. I always have my little spreadsheet. She happened to be one of the stars of this film and actually the lead. I'm right there with you, Barrett. This is a pretty dang good suspenseful action film. I wasn't really a big fan of action films back in the 80s. They weren't my thing. As I've gotten older, I started, you know, reevaluating a lot of them, and you know, because they're kind of sort of genre films and midnight movies and whatnot. And this film here, I see exactly what you're saying. This is a role that you could have saw someone like Stallone or someone like that starring in back in, you know, 1987. And this is now kind of reinvented, where we have these, and I guess the term is all right, a kick-ass woman who now can play the role that otherwise would have been given to a man, or if not given to a man, at least written for a man. And the character of Brenner, she's really tough. She's smart, and she's definitely someone that is most certainly looking for to survive. And if you like these type of films, action films that are also are thrillers, this is definitely a film that folks should definitely check out. So so I'm right there with you. We're gonna review the film. Probably get into a little spoilers, obviously, because we're going to, you know, critique as well as review. And Ellen, I think we asked a couple of questions that were kind of possibly spoilery anyway. But a lot of the things, I mean, they already, you know, the whole IMDb and trailer kind of spoil some parts of the film anyway. But the main thing is to talk about the significance of the film in December coming out so late, and seeing if it makes best of list and things of that nature, especially for genre films. All right, yeah. So let's set the film up a little bit, Barrett. I'll put it together here. Basically, there's a pre-credit scene, but we'll talk about that in a second. But afterwards, Brenner, who is an ex special ops person from like you know, the military, so she's well trained in various things like survival skills and taking out an opponent that is stronger than her and things of that nature. And she's with her husband, who's a police officer, and they're out to go basically camping, hiking, one of those, you know, weekend trips to the middle of nowhere, just to get away from troubles and whatnot. And when they're out there, unfortunately, we have some unsavory folk who kind of harass them a little bit, and then eventually they become more than that and actually become very violent, and that's where we have the husband getting killed, as mentioned in the IMDb, and Brenner has to make a decision, and she decides to get vengeance. Is that pretty much it? I mean, was there anything else to add to that?
Yeah, but I don't think it's much of a decision. She's pretty much on board to take vengeance pretty fast.
Yeah. I mean, it is a pretty horrific thing that happens to her and her husband, for sure, because her husband's dead. And when you're in the middle of nowhere, no means to escape, because it's not like she can get back to her vehicle or to the local town, because we're talking about anywhere in the U.S. that, you know, is like 4 to 5 miles away from a town, right?
Yeah, and it's worse than that, because they go back to her camp and they destroy it. And don't they take a car, too? So she doesn't even have a car. She has nothing.
Right. You're absolutely right. Yeah. So she's really screwed, because, yeah. That's actually a really good point to bring up, Barrett, because a lot of films, especially independent cinema or smaller budgeted films, don't necessarily have great screenwriters. And that is an excellent screenwriting point to take care of that, because a lot of people would ask that question. It's like, why didn't she just go back to the camp and get her their gear, or why didn't she just head back to her car? You know, but you're right. They take it all away, and that writers were smart enough to put that into the script.
Yeah. So basically, once she sees that, she makes a stick, a spear out of a stick, because she has nothing else. No food, no nothing. That's all she's got.
Yep. Absolutely. It's crazy. No water, nothing.
She doesn't even know where they are, so she's going to go back to the point she saw them at that point, you know, the last place, which is where her husband was murdered.
Right, exactly. Yep. And she does kind of know one thing, though, because where she gets captured / tortured along with her husband, she knows where that house or cabin is.
Yep.
So that you're right, that's a main plot point of how she's able to refine these people in such a remote area and whatnot.
Well, these people aren't, you know, I'm not going to say they're the smartest, but they're pretty smart. Like, they clear out, because the reason that they're worried about her and her husband is because her and her husband find a secret door in this cabin, and there's all sorts of guns in there. And these guys are also smart enough to get rid of all that stuff.
That's true. You're right. Yeah, once
easy, because there was a lot of it.
yeah, because basically the room, it wasn't really a hidden room. It was just what it was. They just pushed a bookcase or a bureau or something in front of the door, and once, you know, someone discovers it, which happened to be Ellen and her husband. Even though they, in theory, think they eliminated that's the actress, the character Brenner and her husband. Once they think they killed them, they immediately, you know, you can think, okay, they're just going to, okay, they got rid of the trouble. They can still use the hidden room as a hidden room. But obviously they're also smart enough to know that, you know, there's a whole part of the house / cabin that people would know is there. And yet no one can get to the room through inside the house, and it was that easy for someone to find the room. It's time to you know, pack it up and get rid of the quote-unquote secret room, because it was that easy to find, even if the people who found it are now eliminated.
Exactly.
All right, so let's talk about the opening scene first. The opening scene alone is – it could be an awesome movie, I think.
It could. And we never really find out what exactly was going on.
Yeah. It's basically a it's kind of interesting, because basically we find two police officers. One happens to be Brenner's husband. And again, that's played by
Passmore.
Yeah, right. Who's well known for a number of television. What was it called?
The Glades.
Yeah, that's it. Exactly.
And he was in Saw, by the way.
That's right. He was. Yeah.
Yeah.
So his character's name's Dylan. And then he has a a police officer, and they're undercover folk. So, you know, they're not, in other words, undercover meaning that they don't have uniforms. They're regular clothes offices. And they're at this remote house, and they pretty much know that whoever they're looking for is in there. And they decide to go in, even though they call for backup, they don't.
One guy decides to go in right away, and so the other follows.
Yeah, right. His partner, Dylan's partner, just goes in, and obviously he has some sort of animosity to the criminals inside, but obviously that's bad police work because it probably, since they had them surrounded in a sense, all they had to do was wait for the rest of the cops, and then they could have just surrounded the house, right?
Right.
But again, human emotion sometimes overpowers us and whatnot. Let's talk about these villains. These villains were pretty awesome.
Yeah. They're wearing, well, the one was wearing a bunny hat. I don't remember the other one.
Yeah, it kind of reminded me of either The Strangers or You're Next.
Yes, You're Next.
Yeah, because they're you know, wearing these weird masks and, you know, and they're murderers, basically.
Yeah.
And it was really creepy, too. It was kind of, I thought when I first started watching this film, I thought it was going to be a horror film because of it. You know? But basically what happens is the partner gets shot. We don't know if he dies or not. And then Dylan has to take out two or three of these masked psychos.
And then he gets in hand-to-hand with the last one with the rabbit mask.
Right, exactly. And he has to actually put the gun to the rabbit mask's head and literally just blow his brains out. And again, we don't know much. What's that again?
After getting stabbed.
Right. And we don't know what type of police they are. I mean, you know, I had a neighbor of mine who was a policeman of a pretty big town in the area that I grew up in. And he said he never had to pull out his gun once in his entire 40 years. And so, you know, we don't know. Maybe this was the first time that Dylan's character pulled out a gun. We don't really know. So the shock of having to blow someone's brains out, never mind seeing his partner shot, never mind getting stabbed himself, obviously could be a huge traumatic experience, you know, because it's not like necessarily an inner city where, you know, you may have to use your wits a little differently than, say, a more rural place like this place. So my guess is that he's the type of cop that probably never had to pull his gun out ever. And that's the reason why he is what is it when you're PTSD?
Yeah, PTSD.
And so I think that's what he has, because after that scene and he blows the brains out of the rabbit guy, he wakes up in the car with his wife heading towards their vacation. And I think this is, and he has the wound still, you know, he's bandaged up where he got stabbed in the abdomen. So I'm guessing that this may be one of those trips, not just for vacation, but also to, you know, he may have been told to, you know, go off, you know, you're forced to take 3 weeks off to just clear your head and whatever.
Yeah, like a healing thing for him.
Yeah, and mental health.
It could have been like maybe 2 weeks after he was stabbed, maybe. Might not even been that long. Because he's still bleeding a little bit from it.
Yeah, you're right. Because even at the bandage, so you know it can't be that long because he still has the bandage. But you're right, you can still, every so often, it, you know, it bleeds like a lot of stitches and things like that do. And then that's the beginning of the film, and then the film turns into almost like I was going to say Deliverance, but not really, because in Deliverance they were just psychos.
I was almost thinking of the beginning of Cabin Fever, where they, you know, stop at that little gas station, and yeah, they deal with the small town people, and that's what happened to them here. They stop at this little restaurant to get some food, and they have to, well, actually on the road they're dealing with those guys, right? So those guys start chasing after them in their car, yelling at her, saying she's hot and hey, come over to me and all that stuff.
Yeah, that's right. It's Butch, who's in a pickup truck, and it's actually just him driving. There's no one else with him. And yeah, he's being the typical chauvinist redneck jerk, basically, right? You know, harassing an outsider, treating people rudely. Nowadays, people would call it male entitlement. I don't know what they would call it, but you know what I'm talking about. They have new terms now. Before, they would just call him an effing asshole. Nowadays, they have all these terms like toxic masculinity. That's the word I'm looking for.
Yeah, exactly.
And stuff like that. So, but either way, it's more than that. It's just, you know, a trashy guy harassing people on the road.
Which is ridiculous and, also. I mean, just that he would do that. What an asshole.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I mean, when that happened, I kind of figured, okay, this ain't going to be good. Because I actually went into the movie blind. I didn't see the trailer. I didn't read the synopsis or the wiki or any reviews. Yeah, so I could just tell that, okay, if there's a guy like that in this area, it's going to be one of those towns, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, exactly.
Yes. But generally, the people at the diner seem nice, except
yeah.
Butch shows up eventually with his group, yeah. And they're a bunch of assholes. But there's a older woman who seems pretty nice, who everybody calls Mama, and she either owns the restaurant or is the manager. And she seems pretty nice and whatnot, but obviously it's
pay too for their meal, which sets them off a little bit.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah. So, I guess we could get into. Let's see. We're in about 30 minutes now, and we got a 30-minute interview that we're going to add near the end. So we still have some time. Let's talk about what happened. So, they're out camping finally, whatnot, and as you know, or as what happens, sometimes it rains, and so they have to bolt, and they actually find this house/cabin in the woods, which kind of makes you think. Okay,
cabin in the woods, not good, empty.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so it makes you think. Okay, it's gonna be a horror film again, and. So they take shelter in there, and this is where, like you said, they find the hidden room with all the guns. And when they do that, you know it's bad. And the first thing you want to do is get the hell out of there, I would think.
Yeah, and he is saying, "Let's get out of here," while she is very curious.
Yes.
He's like, "We need to go. This is time to go." But at that point, it's too late.
Right. Yeah, and sure enough, Butch and all the bad guys show up and
knock them out.
Yeah. And this is what happens is they question them, you know, and all that other stuff. And then of course they already had animosity because, you know, they were the ones that were bothering them earlier at the diner and on the road. So the husband gets shot, and then Brenner gets shot as well.
Not a threat first, because remember, he's like, "I'm really sorry," because they find out that he is a cop, but that, you know, they are just
investigator.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But he's like, "I'm sorry," and then he shoots him in the head and shoots her in the head, in air quotes.
right.
And then they put the bodies in a pit.
That's right. Yeah. And that's
what only Grace said.
Yeah, that's where the movie, like, really, I guess the second act or even the third act begin, which is basically they're left for dead. Brenner's character actually survives. The bullet wound was a graze, and I guess there was enough, you know, gore or blood that they just assumed she was dead, and they didn't do the typical mob. If they were really good criminals, they would have been like the mob and made sure two in the head and one in the chest or something, you know.
Exactly. But, you know, head wounds are pretty bloody, so it, you know, You don't always know. I mean, I've watched some crime shows, true crime shows, where they're like, when at first look, this person wasn't shot, something else happened to them. But when they go through the body, they find a bullet hole. You know what I mean? So
right.
You just never know. And she acted dead, that's for sure. I think she was definitely unconscious.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. At best, she had a concussion. At best.
Yeah.
And now this is what I kind of liked about this film, because a lot of films where they have the final girl, as they say, you know, in or Scream Queen, or as they say, which is fine. But nowadays, not in the 80s, but nowadays, those type of characters become like superheroes. So, for example, we mentioned the movie You're Next. You know, she kind of becomes a superhero in that film. I know she had some sort of outback training or something and stuff, but she wasn't really like any skilled in, you know, fighting and survival or not. And that character just became like the superhero. And that was one thing I had an issue with that film and a lot of films like it. Because you'd usually just have regular people that suddenly turn into superheroes, specifically women. And the reason I say that is because a lot of these movies now have been replaced with women as a lead, because that's, you know, more original, more interesting in a sense, because we've seen too many films with the men like that. And this film here, though, they explain it away quick, because her character, Brenner, she has the skills. In other words, she's already a trained special ops person from the military, so it's way more believable.
Flashbacks too to her, and this is a good use of flashbacks. I want to say I'm not a fan of flashbacks, but these are a good use of them. Very short, showing what she experienced in some little scenes, all peppered throughout. And you see at one point that she had been captured and had to deal with that. So she's really experienced. She's not like someone that doesn't know anything.
Right. Yeah. And that's actually a cool thing about this film than, say, compared to Your Next, and not to pick on Your Next continuously, but that's the only one that I can really think of at the moment. But like in the Your Next, they don't have those flashbacks. So when she suddenly becomes a superhero in a sense or whatnot, it's like, okay, we're just taking your word for it. Well, in this film here, like you said, we do have these little mini flashbacks, never mind the conversation at the beginning with her husband. So we already know. And so it doesn't come out of left field, you know?
Right. And
go on.
I think all the fights with her are realistic. Like a lot of times you'll see a fight between a male and a female, and some of it's just not realistic. Whereas this, you know, if the male gets in close, she gets hurt more. You know what I mean? Like, because they outweigh her. And she's able to use her skills to get out of it in most cases. But she does take damage when they get in close. But she does the preponderance of her damage, you know, is at range. Like, you know, arms and feet. Hands and feet.
Right. No, and that's a fair point. Because We actually did a episode that's coming out right after this one for Halloween Boutique Psychotronic Reviews about a film called A Good Woman Is Hard to Find. And that film, even though that woman wasn't a trained military person or whatever, her character felt realistic too, because they had things like that, right? Where, you know, she could use the gun well when she was, you know, at point blank range, for example, you know, not in, like in a movie, say like Hush, that's another film that is well known, where the woman never used a crossbow in her life, and she's able to shoot a guy from 50 feet away, and that, you know, that isn't going to happen in real life, you know. And then also in A Good Woman Is Hard to Find, you know, she couldn't move the body because, you know, she's a smaller woman or whatever, and in a lesser film like Hush, you know, she probably could move the body, you know, and this film here, with the backstory of Brenner, we don't have to worry about that. And that's another thing too, is that like a lot of those films from the 80s, they had the lead character wasn't just an everyday man, right? He wasn't a superhero. He had the military training, and here, they follow that suit, which makes it more realistic, I feel.
Right. Yeah.
Now we. What's that?
I was going to say, even when she lifts a guy up, but she uses what she lifts him with. She wraps it around a tree branch to make it easier to lift him. You know what I mean? So she's not. You don't have to use all your strength to do it. You use the pulley system.
Right, right, exactly. That's a great. My father, who was an engineer, and actually he's retired now, but he used to always talk about engineering and how the reason it interested him so much was things like that, which is something that weighs 500 pounds. If you set up a certain pulley system or whatever, you can then lift it. And she, having the military training, you know, has learned these things. And you're absolutely right. That was really cool. It allowed her to do things intelligently as well as just brute force wise. And she uses physics to, you know, throw, you know, so if someone comes after her, you know, she doesn't beat them up, even, you know, because that obviously someone that's 300 pounds against 10-pound woman or whatever she is, there's no way she's going to be able to stop it, even if she is trained, unless she uses physics or weight not. Distribution. Yeah, well, that's
please
true,
snap
yeah.
for a while.
Right. That's too funny. That's good, right? Yeah. Now we do get another big reveal here, and I don't think it's a spoiler either, because it's actually in the trailer. And again, though I didn't see the trailer before I watched the film, I've watched the trailer since. We find out Mama is actually the leader of this Moonshine/Gunrunner group.
Yep.
And that was kind of somewhat surprising. So, and it's also kind of horrific too, because you have this very, very, very small town, and it's probably not even a town. It's probably a unincorporated part of a county, maybe.
Yeah.
You know, because you have a sheriff that runs throughout the whole area, but you know, for the town that they're from, it, obviously it's you probably wouldn't even have a cop. I mean, I have a town that's just 5 miles away from me that has like 300 people, and they don't even have a police force. What they do is they have a community police those schools that have like four towns.
Yeah.
That go, you know, those high schools that are, yep. I think I don't even know what they call them.
Well, this one has three cops and plus a person back at the station, because he's at one point with three cops when they go to the house.
Yeah. And, the word I'm looking for is regional. It's a regional.
Yeah. It's more of a regional. Yeah. And it's probably a pretty big region, not very well populated. But the whole area is corrupted. Let's put it that way.
Right. 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 And even though, the sheriff is most certainly not corrupt, one of his employees is.
Yes, for sure.
Yeah. And then of course, Mama being the head, and if she's, you know, like the owner of the restaurant and all this other stuff, Brenner is in trouble. Where, in other words, when I say trouble, meaning she's not going to be able to get help outside of, if she found a house, for example, and knocked on the door, help, I need help. You know, you never know. But all these people.
Well, and that happens to her, right? In the movie.
Yeah, actually, you're right.
Does happen to her.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's one of those things where you can't get help from anybody, because everybody is either aligned with Mama or is
afraid.
Afraid. Yeah, exactly.
And the only one who really isn't is the sheriff, and that's because he's new and he doesn't know any better.
Yeah, right, right. Exactly. Yep. Yeah. So that's a fair point. So we find out that Mama, besides the guns, we find out that she's running a moonshining business. And when we say that, we're talking about like silos of booze. Like those big tanks that hold water, that type of stuff. So this is a big business. And then we also find out another thing about the whole group is that they're kind of
a cult.
Well, slave traders too.
Yeah, yeah, because they are in the sex trade. Yeah, because the women
sex trade. That's the word. Yeah,
yeah, the women disappear, and but all of the women there, except for Mama, are being used as basically slaves for sex and for other and to make cooking. You know, do the cooking and all that. And they're running guns, so they're not just doing one thing. But I still wouldn't call them a cartel.
Right, right. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, so they have a bunch of women who are kind of unfortunate slaves, like you said, as concubines, as workers, as well as baby farms kind of thing going on there. And then they have the moonshine, and then they got the gun running. But yeah, yeah, I wouldn't call them a cartel, and I wouldn't call them like the Snells in Ozark.
No.
That because
no.
You know those people are wealthy and all this, you know. So these people are your typical, I guess, more similar to,
like in Justified. If you've ever watched the show Justified,
yeah. Okay, all right. I have not, but I've heard about it.
Yeah. There's families in there that they're just, you know, like backwoods family. They're making money doing the various things, and they own their land, and it's, you know, inviolable, and they're doing
yeah, what station is that on? Is that still on, too?
Not FX, I think, but I think it might be on Netflix. I'm not positive now, or one of those.
Right, right. Is that still on, or is that run out? Run its course.
But yeah, it has Timothy Oliphant as the main character, and he's just always awesome. So
yeah, he is. He's fantastic. Yeah, I was thinking more like the Langmore family from the Ozarks.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, like Ruth's father.
Yeah, exactly like that. Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Some of them have been in and out of jail. The really smart ones haven't, and they're usually in control. And yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
They find ways to make money that they don't have otherwise in this, you know, area because there's not a lot of jobs.
Right, right. Yeah, and it's kind of like you said, a cultish, right? Because, I mean, there's all these group of folk, guys specifically, and none of them are related in a sense. And yet they all kind of, if not live there, they're always around there because they're all, it's almost like a home / occupation for most of these guys.
Yep.
You know, so they're getting paid, they're getting the slave, the woman, they're getting the money, whatever, and they feel like they're part or something and whatnot, and unfortunately they're all, as a result, criminals because of it.
And she does have one younger son who's kind of looks like an accountant. And he's
in
those languages. It's like she's making him to be the leader eventually, but he is picked on by the other men.
Right, right. So he doesn't have the personality of Mother. So I don't think he'll be able to do it if she ever did, you know, decide to pack it in and pass the torch.
Well, and he doesn't have the charisma either, and he was so disliked. Yeah, I don't see how he could ever be in charge.
Right, right, exactly. So yeah. All right. So, what do we want to talk about next about the film? Any specifics or anything? You had something you want to say?
There are a lot of good deaths.
That's true. Yeah, there's a lot of deaths in this film when you think about it.
There are a lot of deaths in this movie. So one, you know, she gets this. So first off, she goes and she heads to the where they're making some moonshine, and she's basically trying to figure out where they're located. Right.
Yeah.
So did she hitch a ride on the truck before? Yeah, she did. Didn't she? She hitches a ride on the truck and she gets to where the house is, where they are. And then she just keeps an eye on them for a while to watch and see what they're doing. And then she goes to this moonshine making place and she kills one of the guys, comes up behind him. How does she kill that guy? I can't remember.
Yeah. Oh, shoot. I can't remember either.
His throat or something like that?
Yeah, I can't remember. There's so many deaths.
She kills that guy, and then she gets the other guy, and they get in a fight, and she finally takes him down, but he's not dead, and she hangs him up with a – isn't it a hose?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, one of the moonshine hoses.
System. Yeah, one of the moonshine hoses. And she basically strangles him until he tells her what she wants to know. And then she cuts his Achilles tendon so he can't run very fast. And she lets him go.
Right, and then she blows up the moonshines.
Yeah, she blows up the moonshine.
Right, right. So now they know something's up, but they think it's incompetence at this point, which I felt was kind of cool that, you know, the fools, you know, screwed up and it blew up. But then, of course, when they get there and they find the people dead, obviously they know something nefarious is going on. Also at this point too, the sheriff is actually
shot.
He's out hunting. He's out hunting deer at that point.
This part's pretty funny too. So she kills the one guy, and then does she eventually kill the guy that she cut to who she hamstrings?
No, she kills them all for sure.
He gets back to Warren Mama.
Yeah, right. Yeah, he gets picked up by what's his name? Butch.
Yeah,
because Butch goes out there and he jumps in the back of the truck of Butch's back, or wants to jump in Butch's back of the truck. But what happens is he gets in the car.
Yeah, she hasn't gotten
She's the one that she jumps in the back of the truck, and that's how she gets back to their house.
Yeah, because she hadn't found the house yet. She found this moonshine shack. So then she gets back to the house via that method, and then she keeps watch on the house to see what they're going to do. And then the cops find the dead body, and they go to talk to Mama about it. And the two deputies are like, yeah, whatever, you're going to go talk to her about it? She pretty much does whatever she wants.
Right.
So then they go back to the house, and they give some story like, oh, yeah, it was a slit throat, wasn't it? Or he stabbed himself. Yeah,
he suicided. Himself.
He suicided. He's like, what? He stabbed himself 6 times in the chest?
right. And at this point, the cops ain't going to do anything because, you know, it's just, what, one or two? There's two of them versus, like, 2 of them against, like, 20 guys.
Yeah, there were a lot of guys there, yeah.
Yeah, and there's no way they're going to be able to do anything until they bring reinforcements, if they so desire. But the movie's over before any of that happens.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. One of the big surprises I felt was, before I talk about the big surprise, I like what you said because, it shows you, again, this is smart script writing. Brenner's character is counting the number of guys, looking at the house, finding the entrances, weak spots, and all that. And so she's doing the typical stuff that she did in the military as a special forces. So she's finding out the numbers of folk that she's going to have to take out or worry about. And basically mapping in her.
Yeah. Which ones are strong that are going to be the big problem ones and all of that.
Right. Yeah. Mapping, you know, things in her head and all that. But, the one surprise was Butch getting killed so quickly.
I was surprised by that. Yeah.
Yeah, because I thought he was going to be – because, you know, he was the first antagonist, and he was the one that fired the gun and killed her husband. So he figured – and he was basically the boss or the number two after Mama. I thought he was going to be the big villain, and it turns out that wasn't the case. The big villain really turns out to be Mama, right? So it's a woman versus woman film.
Yep, and I like that. I like that he died – It actually, he might have been easier to kill than some of the rest.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah, absolutely.
Because that action scene in the house is that's those guys are harder to kill than Butch is. But Butch is drunk. Let's put it that way. At that point.
Right. Butch was drunk, and he was also because he had the whole moonshine jug. But also, he is a very volatile person.
Yeah.
You know, versus say other people that she has to fight who are more apt to think things through before doing something stupid.
Yeah, and if he'd gotten a good hold of her, he probably would have killed her, but she pulls it out and kills him.
Right.
Well, here's where they made a major mistake. They're mourning this guy that died, and they're like, we'll get to her in the morning. Well, she doesn't wait.
Right. That's another good point too. You're right. Yeah, because they think confidence with numbers, you know, and they still don't know that she's special forces. But even if she is special forces, you know, they still think, you know, 20 of us against, you know, one person, you know. But the problem is you're right. They're lazy, lackadaisical, and whatever, while she's has a mission.
Yeah, determined.
Yeah, determined, exactly.
And she gets them when they're alone, too. Like, there's maybe one or two of them. She doesn't fight them when they're as a group, or she tries not to.
Right, that's actually a good point, too. Yeah, yeah. She's doing the typical special forces thing. You know. I mean, I played so many video games where, you know, you do that, where you have to sneak into a building, but you take out the first two guards and whatever, and then no one knows that the guards are gone. And, you know, I played that game Hitman. You know, you take out somebody, you put the body in a barrel, and then you move on into the building. And that's kind of what this is like, is that she's taking out people here and there and not letting them know soon enough that those people are missing.
Yep. Well, and that's when the next day is when we get to see, I wouldn't say it's a flaw, but it's, she doesn't make a mistake, but she does something that gets her into trouble because she tries to save the women.
Right, right. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I mean, I think
she's compassionate, so she tries to get them out and tries to escape, and she gets out with one of them. The other two get captured or killed.
Yeah, one actually betrays her, and one gets killed.
Yeah, and so she runs off with that girl, and they go out into the wilds. But then Mama gets this guy with a dog, with some dogs to chase after her.
Right, right. Yeah, yeah. So that's not good. Yeah, that's a good point. Is that the compassion, unfortunately, is fortunately a good thing. But I think it would have been wiser had she finished her mission before trying to save them, because technically those women weren't in any harm.
They were already being harmed, and
they were already.
Yeah, if it was another day, it just was another day of them, you know, in servitude. Now, that's not great. I'm not saying it's great, but she would have been safer.
Right, exactly. So it would have been wiser to finish the job of taking out all the criminals before worrying about the people in the cell, or in a sense, again, this is, I play video games, I've seen movies where people come in and they go, I'll rescue you in a second. You stay here. Don't worry. Right back. You know, like we saw that in Silence of the Lambs, where Jodie Foster's character is telling the girl I'll be back in a moment. And, you know, the girl in the well says, just get me out of here. Come back here, you fucking bitch. You know, and she actually says that in that movie. But the point is that, you know, you're there in the cell or in the well in that case. And in this case, you're in the, you know, servitude of the kitchen or whatever they are. It's like you said, it's just another day in the life. It's not anything's going to happen to them within the next 2 hours while you take care of business.
Right. But they did kind of instigate it because they kind of ran too, or they were trying to get out anyway. So I don't know. I think they wanted to be free too, so it might have happened anyway. But still, if she had just gone along and started killing all of them, continuing that on, they might have all lived.
Yeah, right. That's a fair point. Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, this is now really the third act of the film. Then is when she escapes with one of the captured woman.
Yep.
Actually, there's a funny scene. Well, it wasn't funny. It was actually disheartening, I felt, when they meet up with the sheriff. The sheriff. They explain what's going on, and so the sheriff isn't going to, you know, doesn't hold the gun on them anymore. And unfortunately, what happens is he gets shot, and they have to take out a couple more of Mama's boys. And then Brenner just wants to leave the sheriff. He goes, "Sorry, sheriff, it's not my problem."
Yeah, she's like, "You're just dead weight now."
Yeah, yeah. I don't know if that was just second nature to the characters' military experience, because, you know, a lot of these special ops things is when someone gets wounded, you either leave them there or they have to be taken out, type of thing, because they can't be taken prisoners. Yeah. And I don't know if that was her doing that type of thing, or if she was just like, who cares, let's just get the hell out of here, it's not my problem.
Well, I think part of her was probably thinking, you know, how can the sheriff not know of everything going on here?
Yeah, that could be true too, yeah. Makes sense. Yeah.
But the girl forces her to help him, and right. So they do start taking him, but they do eventually leave him.
Yeah, they have to, because...
They have to, yeah. He's wearing them down, and they're getting chased by dogs, men on four-wheelers, and men on foot.
Right. But fortunately, they leave him, but they actually get him into safety, because they get him behind like a bunch of rocks and bushes and all that stuff. So he's now not in the open or in danger of being taken out as a witness to what's going on, I guess.
Right. And she killed the two guys that had seen him. Those right. guys that shot him, they both got shot. So,
yeah, exactly. So really, I guess we can discuss the finale. So, why don't you explain what's going on, and we can like critique and go around.
Okay. So they get across a river. But eventually they get captured by these guys with guns, and they have more equipment than the other guys had when they were searching her down. They had, you know, automatic rifles, and they had dogs, and they were dressed kind of military like. They get them, they capture them. Oh, and the girl had gotten shot too, right? She got shot. And
yes.
They go back, they take them back to the house, and for some reason Mama isn't gonna kill her right away. Because she wants to judge her, I guess. So they lock her up in a room. And then the girl she was going to kill, but Brenner basically saves her life, and especially when she says that she's pregnant. So Mama doesn't kill her right there anyway. And she goes back to servitude, and Mama basically tells her, you don't think she saved you, did she? Because you're going to die basically after you have the baby. And Brenner's locked up in the room with a guard who you kind of get the idea he wants to try and have sex with her or rape her or whatever. And
sexual assault.
Yeah, sexual assault. And she's tied up pretty good. I mean, I don't see how she couldn't have gotten away if that girl hadn't snuck into the room and stabbed the guy and then freed her.
Right, right.
Do you think she would have been able to get away out of that rope?
Yeah, you know. Yeah, I don't think so.
Yeah,
I don't know. I mean, well, your opinion is that she possibly could have. I mean, if it was
I don't think she could have. I think she would have been dead if that girl hadn't come to.
Let me bring that up because a lot of these films, and when I say a lot of these films, I mean almost every friggin' film.
Yeah.
The person that is tied up always escapes.
You
know, and that doesn't happen in real life. If you have zip ties tied to you or something, you're done. You're not going to get out of it.
Right. They show people breaking those zip ties.
Yeah.
That's too impossible.
Or sliding your hand through because of sweat or, you know, some other nonsense.
Yeah.
But, and even someone as competent as Brenner's character with the skill set she has, she isn't going to get out of that either. So I think it was great screenwriting again, where they had a character there to do it for her and not just a character that just says, gee, I feel bad about this woman tied, but someone that she actually has already been with and knows and actually
has
tried to speak with.
Yeah, she has rapport with her, and she tried to save her, and this girl, even after, so she kills that guy, but she doesn't know what to do. She's in shock at that point, because she's never killed anybody, and that's pretty real. And Brenner has to get her focused, and it takes a little bit to get her focused to cut the ropes to get her down.
Right, because again, that's the thing. She has to have the woman cut her down. And again, that's how it should be. It shouldn't be like, okay, now I can break the rope and escape.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, go on.
Yeah, go ahead. No, you go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that's another thing that I really liked about this film, and I had already mentioned it, is they didn't make the hero a superhero. They they had everything set up correctly in the script to allow her to be able to escape or to be able to do what she does because of her backstory or things in the script, like this woman is able to untie her rather than her just breaking out.
Right.
So continue now. Yeah. Sorry to interject.
Okay, so she gets her. Oh no, this was good discussion. So she gets her free, and then she tells her to hide under a bed, and she goes on to just lay waste to all the guys in the house, left and right. She kills a bunch of them. There are some great. It's some great fight scenes. I mean, that whole fight in the house, I love. It's just really well done. It's well choreographed, well scripted. They just do some good fighting in there. What did you think of that scene?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, a couple of things is that Ellen Holman actually did a lot of her own stunts.
She did it kind of cool. From what she said.
Yeah. Actually, right. Yeah, because she's part of or her husband is a part of a stunt team. He's actually a stunt coordinator for a lot of films, and she participates in it as well, and she's fully trained in I think it's jiu-jitsu among other things, and she was like a athlete in high school where she had like or college where she has some like records in Michigan for a woman track and field, so she's able to do it all herself, and she actually even says that's one good thing about having those skill sets is the reasons why she was able to get or partly the reason why she was able to get the job for Matrix 4. Not only is she beautiful and charismatic, but because she has that skill set, she gets to stand out from every other Hollywood actress. And with that skill set, she actually says that a lot of directors and stunt coordinators and all those type of folk like to have people to be able to do it themselves. And if you can find someone that has the charisma and beauty as she has, as well as the skill to do her own stunts, that's a huge thing for casting directors.
Yep.
And sure enough, you know, she has that and is able to, was able to turn that into Matrix 4, which is pretty awesome. But anyway, continue. What we were saying was that, the action scene was really well choreographed in this scene, you know, specifically for the ending.
It doesn't stop. It's one long scene.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's really, really cool. It's one of those really great scenes that you're like, oh, wow.
Yeah.
Impressive that they were able to do this. So that's probably the best action scene of the movie. And she kills all these guys. And then it comes down to her in a room, and Mama brings in the girl that she had hiding under the bed and is threatening her death unless she gives up, right?
Right. And also there's this other guy that was kind – it was one of those guys that was kind to her while she was a prisoner.
Yeah, yeah.
And so she's willing to try to work with him to see if he can – if she can – if not turn him, at least turn him to a little bit to help.
Yep.
And so, yeah, so it's really like a showdown between Mummer and Brenner with the girl that she tried to save basically with a knife to her throat and this kind of kindly guy that was part of the group that's also in the side of the room, you know, looking on kind of thing.
Yeah.
So it's definitely a tense scene.
Yeah, very tense scene. I don't remember how he died.
Oh, he's the one that stabs her, Ellen. I mean, Brenner. He stabs Brenner, and then she has to kill him.
Oh, right. Because, and Mama slits the girl's throat.
Exactly. But what happens is she, at that point, assumes the guy isn't going to get involved and that he had enough empathy for her based off of his actions earlier in the film, that she ignores him, and Mama kind of gets him to, you know, do something. And his allegiance is still with Mama.
Yeah. Which I had pretty much figured it still was, because at one point he comes back to just give Mama all the information. So I never felt like he was really turning at all. He just was being kind by wiping off her face at that one point and giving her some water.
Right. And to be honest, you know, he's probably been there as long as any of the other guys. So yeah. He's suspect just for being there.
Right, right.
Yeah.
So this is the part that, there's two deaths that I just didn't like the most, and that's just because I like the characters. I did not like when her husband was killed, but that creates all the tension for the movie. Just because I like Matt Passmore, I'd love to see him in anything he's in. But this girl, when she's killed, that just makes me so mad, because she had gotten through so much, and then she gets her throat slit, and I'm like, dang it.
Yeah, that was a major shocker. I had no idea that would happen. I assume she was, I guess, had plot armor.
Yeah, that's what I thought too. But nope, she gets killed.
Yeah, that was shocking as heck. So yeah, and then of course Mummer, not being a skilled fighter, never mind all her goons are now basically dead.
That looks like an accountant.
Yeah. She's all done. Mama's going to get killed at this point. You would think.
You think, yes.
Yeah, and that's the thing. That's another interesting aspect of the film that Brenner decides to just get the hell out of there, right? Takes the truck or something and bails.
Yep.
And you figure that's the end of the film. But I kind of thought that was kind of interesting, because the villain doesn't die.
Right.
You know? But of course that is just
not neat enough. So yeah. They fade to black, and then you get to the sheriff and he gets a phone call.
Yeah, and it's like a couple of months later, I think, right?
Yeah, I think it says like 3 months later, and she tells him she might need him, so be ready. And then she hangs up.
Right. You're right. Yeah, exactly. And again, being a military training and whatnot, she uses a sniper rifle and takes out Mama.
But she calls her, talks to her on the phone, and that's when she shoots her.
Yeah, that was kind of cool to basically let her know, you know. I mean, there's a little James, but I've always, like, if it was the mob, they would just shoot her and you know, they don't even care. You know, she's dead. Tell her anything you want. It doesn't matter. She's dead. You know, but that's not the point of what Ellen's there. She's not there for business. She's there for vengeance.
Vengeance and justice.
Yeah, exactly. So she basically lets Mama know, yeah, you're all done. And then she shoots her with the sniper.
In the forehead.
Yeah, in the forehead. That was pretty awesome. Oh, and in front of her son, the accountant guy.
Blood all over him.
Yeah, that was kind of nuts. And that's pretty much the film, right? It faded back after that, right?
Yep, that's it.
Yeah. So it is a pretty solid action film, I felt. No doubt about it.
Yeah.
So the fortunate thing is that we did get to interview the lead actress, as mentioned earlier, Ellen Holman. And we asked her a lot of things about the movie stuff. And then I think you were the one that asked her about The Matrix. So we got a little bit about The Matrix, too, which is good. So we got a little, how she got the role and all that. And that's some of what I already mentioned, which is she, I think she even says that a lot of directors actually like to hire people that already have a skill set that they can use, and they don't need to double, because it is a pain in the ass, Ellen says, to find people to double for you. You know, never mind extra salary and all that. So I don't know. Do you want to get into that interview now?
Sure, let's do it.
All right. So we're going to bring up the interview. We recorded it just a week ago, and we're waiting to record this part of the show and then add it on. So let's get into that interview and hear what Alan has to say. All right, so we are here with actually the star of the film that we're reviewing, and why don't you introduce yourself and let folks know all about you.
Hey guys, Ellen Holman here, aka Brenner from Army of One. I'm excited here to chat with you.
Excellent. I'm glad you were able to join us. We're reviewing your film, and we were able to get to see it. And I won't speak for Barrett, but I think he'll have the same thoughts as me, which is we loved it. But we have a bunch of questions for you, because I'm sure some of our listeners would be curious to know some of the details behind the film and some of the stuff that you did in the film. So let's get to the questions. And Barrett, why don't you begin?
So I'm curious what your favorite part of the movie is.
Oh, my goodness. You know what? I will say one of my it's like picking a favorite child. We all secretly have one, but we never want to reveal it. One of my favorite action sequences was, and that was the Warner in the kitchen. And once you do see this movie, you'll know what I'm talking about. and the reason it was such a spectacular feat is that we had minimal budget, minimal time, and my husband and I, Stephen Dunleavy, who's the stunt coordinator and essentially second unit director. We basically collaborated and thought, well, how are we going to cover this in such a short amount of time? And he goes, well, darling, what do you think of just shooting this in like a wanna? I'm like, a wanna? Oh my God, are you crazy? This just might work. And for those of you who are seeking some clarification as to what I mean, an example is the movie Atomic Blonde, when she's doing that whole incredible sequence, like kicking guys down the stairs, and then she ends up in the car, and they don't cut at all. And just to accomplish that, it's almost very theatrical. So everybody has to be on their mark. Everyone has to hit exactly the points that have been designated in rehearsal. There's so much blood continuity and breakaways. And we only had our stunt performers for an hour to rehearse this. So if one person screws up, you have to start at the beginning. And we actually managed to accomplish this on the very first take. I couldn't believe it. As soon as the director yelled cut, I hear people cheering and I'm like, okay, wait, don't count those chickens yet, guys. Let me look at playback. And every hit sold, which was really a stunning feat when you're working with the camera, trying to, like I said, sell every hit and really tell that story. So that was probably my favorite. And also just to collaborate with my husband is always such a joy.
Nice. One of my questions is that you just mentioned Atomic Blonde, which is a great example of, I guess, the gender swap, where a woman is the lead action hero in a sense. And your film here, Army of One, kind of is that. What's your feeling of now, I guess, having the woman now being the one that gets these type of films? Because unfortunately, over the years, especially in the 80s, it was just the guys.
Right. For many, many years, for decades and decades, actually, the action drama genre has been primarily men. And I feel like that glass ceiling is being shattered in comparison with women really taking the liberty. And something that women bring to screen is, in my opinion, more heart and more empathy. So if anything, it gives more of a dynamic energy to the performance because you're able to see deeper into that character's point of view. And it's, in my opinion, more heartfelt. Like, well, at least that's what I wanted to bring to this character. I didn't want her to just be this hardcore badass the entire time. You want to know why she's going on this rage-filled, vengeance-filled, non-stop bloodbath. you want to understand why she's doing it, and if you don't care why she's doing it, you're not gonna care to watch.
Barrett, what do you got?
So you get very physical in this role, and pretty much most of the roles I've seen you in. What do you do to get yourself prepared for that? Do you do anything special? Did you have to do anything special for this particular movie?
Well, it's something that if this is the particular genre that you want to succeed at, you basically have to be ready for when the phone rings. Because many times by the time you get the job, it's too late to prepare for it, especially in television and lower budget. With something like Matrix 4, we were able to rehearse for weeks, if not months. But for something like Army of One, there's times I would make up the choreography literally on the day as we were shooting. We didn't have the luxury of having extensive previs. No stunt performer had a double, and no actor had a double either. So I've been so used to working in the television world where it's just such a quick turnaround that I'm like, I'm capable of doing this myself. So I'm just going to do it. And my double can, I don't know, go get a magazine or something and like go relax. Cause I just, I'm fortunate enough to have a background in mixed martial arts, particularly jujitsu. And I've been fortunate enough to train, with my husband's stunt team, 8711, who've done, Atomic Blonde, Deadpool, the whole John Wick franchise. So I've been able to learn from them, judo, aikido, and fight choreography. So, because of that advantage, I can bring that to screen. So to answer your question, countless mornings waking up at 4:45 and by 6:45 in the morning, throwing giant guys over my head.
Now, you just mentioned that you are into jiu-jitsu and your husband is a stunt coordinator and whatnot. And if people go to your wiki page, they can find out that you were a great athlete when you were younger during school days and whatnot. Did you bring all that to your role here in Army of One? And Barrett mentioned that he's seen this in other roles that you've done as well. So has that helped you in your acting career, because you can do your own stunts in a sense?
Absolutely. Because like I said, you don't have to edit around a double and you don't have to, rely on face replacement, which is really expensive. And the director also doesn't have to worry about cutting around you. It's something that I take upon myself. It is very high risk and not recommended for longevity in your bones. ask me when I'm 50, how I'm feeling, but I just respect the stunt community so much. I mean, I'm married to a stunt man, a stunt coordinator, as I said, and I just appreciate the long, hard hours they put in, and they're the unsung heroes. They don't even have a category in the Oscars for them yet. Imagine what Mad Max would have been like with its Oscar nominations. It had so many Oscar nominations. Imagine what that movie would have been like without the action. It wouldn't have been a movie. So it's just baffling to me how they don't necessarily get the acknowledgement that I truly believe they deserve.
Nice. Barrett, what do you got?
So at the end of this film, is there going to be a sequel? It kind of felt like that to me when you called the sheriff up.
You know, it's actually kind of funny. The end was, that end bit wasn't actually on the page originally. Oh. That's something that Stephen Durham added at the last minute, like the bit with the sheriff. Mm-hmm. I didn't even actually know they were going to use that, because I think that once editing started, they wanted to create an opportunity that if we wanted to do a sequel, then we can sort of, leave those little Easter eggs in there. But I thought it was extremely important to make sure you have a standalone. And that's always been my opinion, because too many times in this industry, a season finale leaves it on a massive cliffhanger, and then that show is canceled.
Yeah.
you're so angry. And same with film, like the end of it is this massive cliffhanger, and then they don't get the funding to do another one, and then you take your audience for granted and they hate you. So I didn't want that to happen. I wanted it to be full circle. I wanted it to tell that story. And yeah, if someday there exists the potential for a sequel, then there's that's certainly a possibility.
Now, In this film here, unlike a lot of other films, the protagonist usually isn't trained in weapons or melee combat or whatnot. But your character is an ex-military individual, and as a result, your character can fight back and makes the film, I guess, much more realistic than other films where we just have an everyday person who is a survivor and suddenly becomes like super heroic in the sense in their skills. When you came to this project, did that, I guess, grab your attention because it is very different than the less realistic protagonist that we see in a lot of action films?
Well, I mean, look, especially the superhero genre or, you know, the underdog genre, it's like the montages are a la Rocky. It's like, oh, look, all of a sudden he has all this new set of skills that he's really incredible at. No, that's not based in reality. It doesn't mean it's not entertaining. No, like that. There's plenty of content out there that does that, and it's still entertaining. However, I really wanted to do justice to that portrayal of a woman in the military, because they don't have their doubles there. They don't phone a friend to help them out when they're on the battlefield. So we actually, my husband and I spent a lot of time researching what it is that they're trained in. And believe it or not, a lot of it is jujitsu based, especially their ground game. In fact, one of my professors, well, two of my professors, Hidon and Tenor Gracie, travel around the world teaching the military how to defend themselves when you don't have, your sidearm or what have you readily available. So that's what a lot of the choreography is based off of. Like all those throws, like a lot of the hand locks, wrist locks, like that's all stuff they do in jiu-jitsu. That's what the military is well versed in.
Nice. Barrett, what do you got?
So TV versus movie, which do you prefer? I know TV sounds like it's a lot more quick work and movies span more time, it seems like. So the TV seems more demanding.
Well, both certainly have their own challenges. The quick pace of the television world is not for the weak-hearted. You can get, six pages of dialogue that's been revised the night before and you have to be ready to perform it the next day. But granted, usually in television, like such as NCIS, I had a couple season run in there as Amelia, the assassin. Oh, thank you. Thank you. I had such a blast. They're just such veterans in their field. And it's just a plug and play. You get no rehearsal time. Like you don't get to run lines. There's no rehearsal. You do it on the spot. Whether that's like a scene that you're in love with someone or angry at someone, the first time you're doing it with that person is when you step foot on set. Whereas a lot of times a film, you'll have, like chemistry sessions and you'll talk about the script and then it's a more, I shouldn't even say collaborative. It's just a different beast. So in my perspective, you have to be able to do both. I'm used to not having rehearsals. So, if someone's like, oh, do you want to run lines? I'm like, Oh, yeah. Okay. You're not used to doing that. Matt Passmore, for example, he had such a limited window that we fortunately had him for. I was so excited he was on board. We didn't have a single day of rehearsal.
Wow. We
literally met on set and all of a sudden it's like, here's a man that you love more than everything. And go. It's just how it is. And a lot of times it's not shot in order, which can be a total pain in the ass sometimes. Sometimes in the same day, you can shoot the beginning and the end of the same project. But then also bringing this back to your question, in film, you can have months and months and months of rehearsal, but it can be a slog because of that. You can spend, 10 hours on one scene and not even get one side of it. It is so grueling. Oh my God, it's so grueling. So there's both sides of it. You pretty much have to be crazy to be in the entertainment industry. it's just, I don't even know when people say that, oh yeah, I want to be an actor. I'm like, oh God, what you see on screen is such a small, it's such a fraction of it. It really is. It's, but once you get the bug though, once you see it by some amazing wave of luck, you actually are able to complete a project. You're like, oh, it's almost like childbirth, I suppose. You forget how painful it is. So then you're like, oh, that wasn't so bad. I'm going to have another kid. And then when you have another kid, you're like, that was the worst experience of my life. It was so painful. And then you forget and you want to have another kid. So that's what making film and television is.
Now, in this film here, Army of One, your character obviously is out to get justice, in a sense, backward justice for what happened to her and her family, without getting into much spoilers. But also, I noticed your character actually sympathized with other victims in the movie, and there was almost like a sisterhood that your character, along with some of the other characters, during, I guess, a rescue scene, did that come straight from the script, or was that part of the flashback military scenes where we see your character in prison and whatnot in the past? Is it something that you could expand on to explain how strong that sisterhood was in the film, because it really, I felt, came through?
Well, once again, it's infusing more of that heart and more of that empathy, which is actually, that was originally written. I didn't do that aspect of the storyline. I essentially came on as a revisionist and gutted all the action design and then redid all my dialogue and quite a number of other characters as well. But that storyline was already there, just needed to be elevated, in my opinion. I don't know if you've seen the movie Extraction. One of my buddies, Sammy Hargrave, was the director. That was like his big directorial debut, and he crushed it. We're so freaking proud of him. But Chris Hemsworth, when he has that kid that he's slogging around, it's an interesting dynamic, but it's not like a brotherhood. That wasn't how it was written. And the movie, of course, was super entertaining from an action standpoint. And they, you know, they did the job that they came to do. However, with Army of One, by creating that empathetic sisterhood in a sense, you know, older sister, younger sister, mentorship, type of relationship, it just took it to a different level, I feel. And that actually goes back to your question previously of, you know, what is it that women, what differentiates women and men in this particular genre? And I feel like that it, once again, is that heart and the empathy, because that also makes the twist and the turn of the violence that much more, you know, exciting, I guess, if that's the word that we could use.
Yep. Barrett, what do you got?
So you were saying about the choreography and stuff. So you had a lot of the input into all of that. And did you have people that weren't as skilled as you and you had to work with them a lot on the film?
Durham, actually, that's the director, Stephen Durham, had no ego about it. When I said, I'm going to literally gut all of the action here, I'm going to rewrite it and I'm going to do all the choreography, I'm going to create it, he said, no problem. So all the action you see on screen is from my crazy brain seed. And my husband, of course, had to help me create it. So I'd be the one saying, hey, has anyone ever been stabbed in the throat with a deer antler? And he's like, I don't know. Let's research it. And I couldn't actually find anyone that died the same way that this particular character, I won't mention, the way he met his demise. And same with the garden hose scene. I'm like, has anyone ever met their demise with a garden hose? I'm like, can you rig this? Because he's an engineer at heart. Like, he does a lot of rigging, coordinating. I'm like, if you can rig Matrix 4, you can rig Army of One. So he would put together these crazy ideas I would have. Oh, my God. And I would workshop with him. All the action scenes, I would workshop with him. So he hit the ground a lot of times. I'm like, no, that wasn't quite right. How can we fix that?
Now your character and her husband in the film obviously go out into the wilderness for a camping and hiking trip. So they're familiar with camping and hiking and outdoorsmanship and all that. But being in a town that you're not familiar with, meaning your character, and then finding herself in the situation that she lands up in, did you have any did you use like any method acting from the character's experience as a military person in based off the flashbacks, possible jungle or various foreign nations, special ops type stuff? Were you using like method acting to carry that over to the fish out of water in this town or this area that I guess your character wasn't familiar with, or was it kind of like right in the script and you were able to just transform from script to screen that easily?
Well, I think what we wanted to achieve, we didn't want to give away the end at the beginning. And I feel like so many films do that. Like, I wasn't going to be like the tough military chick right from the beginning that was like, hey, babe, I totally could have got those guys myself. I wanted her to be more feminine, and I wanted her to be lighter, so that when she does wake up in a ditch, you see that twist. Like, when she ties her hair back, that's when it's like, oh, shit. Mommy's mad. Like, she's turned. And plus, she's retired. She's no longer in the military, so she's not, that was her past, essentially. Not too distant past, but that was her past. And yes, it's fundamentally a part of her. But, you know, we didn't want to give the ends away in the beginning. So I guess the answer is no. I didn't use that in the first act because I wanted, once that reveal happens, then yes, it's 1,000% embracing her military background and not showing any mercy, literally no mercy.
Nice. Barrett.
So is there an action scene that you filmed for this that didn't make it into the film that you really liked?
I mean, there'd be certain things that I'd be like, oh, is this repetitive? The scene with Cameron Bowen, the character Jesse, when I string him up by the garden hose. that was actually, I still had the rehearsal tape. I actually just watched it the other day. We did some choreography together, a fight sequence. But I was like, what can we do that's different? Like, if I've already, you know, killed this other character right before him, with, you know, some jujitsu, arm lock, et cetera. I'm like, what can we do? I'm like, and I always think in levels. I'm like, oh, well, we can't go underground. Maybe we can go up high. Yeah, tree. Yes. Let's do something in trees. What can we do? Oh, okay. What hasn't been done? So I'll constantly try to think of something different. So Jesse and I did rehearse something completely different. And then, of course, my crazy brain in the middle of the night was like, no, we're not doing any of that. Let's get a garden hose. Honey, you figure out how to engineer it. And just to engineer that, like the wires through the hose and the harness on the actor is... It's a really complicated rig to do it safely. And there are some moments that Jesse did such an incredible performance. I'm like, we need a safe word, dude, because you're freaking me out right now. He just sold it. He sold it almost too well. I'm like, oh my God, are you really choking? Because you're freaking me out.
Now, it's December 23rd, so only a couple days before Christmas. So just for you to take some of your time and come on, that was great and fantastic. Our listeners will be really happy to hear your thoughts on the film and whatnot, especially since a lot of them would have the same questions that we had. So we appreciate that you answered a lot of our questions. Now, where can folks find you on social media and whatnot? And also, is there any other projects that folks should know about that you're going to be in? I know Barrett offline was telling me that he noticed that you were actually going to be in The Matrix 4, which is in 2021 December. It's coming out. And so that seems pretty exciting.
Yes, that was, I mean, talk about a pinch myself moment. Hallelujah, part of a career. It was unbelievably surreal to be a part of that. That's once again the same stunt team that's my family, 8711. So all those boys are very near and dear to me. So it was like we already spoke the same language. So when we were working together, it just felt right. Like that's where I spend most of my time anyway. So I'm like, oh, this is a perfect fit. And Lana Wachowski is just an absolute genius. She likes to shoot things practically. She loves her performance actually doing their own action. Everyone else did have doubles, but she likes to see the street actually blow up. She wants to see the helicopters weaving in between the buildings. Like, this is not CGI. Like, she actually did these things. And to be a part of that franchise was just, I mean, that is definitely a career high. And also working with my husband on that, it was, you know, we're over in Berlin. I'm like, can you believe we're living in Berlin right now, working on The Matrix? Like, how is this real life? But what people don't see is the amount of blood, sweat, tears, endless auditions that you fell flat on your face on. Like, that's the part that people don't see. They don't see the 20 years it's taken to get to The Matrix. But also, aside from Matrix 4, we're going to be waiting quite some time to see that. There's also a film called Love and Monsters that I have some pretty fun scenes in. And that's currently out. And that's also streaming. And that's with Dylan O'Brien, Michael Rooker, and Jess Henwick, which also happens to be my castmate on Matrix 4, which is so crazy. She's absolutely wonderful. So if you're looking for a feel-good movie, like I would call it an action comedy, action dramedy, this one is a crowd pleaser. Love and Monsters. I was just grinning ear to ear. It's such a fun movie. So yeah, check those out and let me know your thoughts. Especially on Army of One, you can find me on social media at Ellen Holman for Instagram, at Ellen Holman for Twitter, and then Ellen Holman official for Facebook.
All right, thanks a lot. We appreciate it once again. During these busy times, and we're all looking forward to seeing you in Matrix 4, and also the film that's out right now. I saw it on Apple to rent, so it's probably something that I'll probably be checking out as well. So once again, thanks a lot for joining us, and good luck over 2021.
Thank you guys so much, and happy holidays.
You too. Thank you very much. It was a pleasure.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
All right. So, yeah, that was a great thing. I actually liked the part, specifically the stuff that you mentioned. I'm glad you brought up The Matrix, because I wasn't going to do that because I wasn't sure, because we didn't ask her if we could, but you decided to ask, and that was good. Yeah. Because it got some information, and she was willing to talk about it. She's really proud of it.
Yeah, she should be. I think it's impressive. I mean, that's the sign of somebody who's moving up, and she's definitely got the physical skills to do those types of movies, and she proved that in this movie, too. So,
I mean,
she definitely has the skills to do pretty much any of those types of movies, so I hope she gets better and bigger roles. I mean, hopefully The Matrix is her really big jumping-off point.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, she mentioned Atomic Blonde, and I liked how she brought that film up, too, because the kick-ass stair scene, the stairs in that apartment building or office building or whatever it was, and that type of stuff is what Ellen could actually do. She doesn't need a stunt double and stuff, you know.
Right.
So
yeah,
so it's kind of cool. So thanks for Ellen to come on. That was pretty awesome, actually. to actually talk to someone that works with the directors of The Matrix and Keanu Reeves. It's kind of cool, actually.
She's got every aspect, actually, you know, since she, like, choreographed, she wrote part of the script. I mean, she does a lot. So she's not just, you know, your typical actor. She's just doing a lot of different things. So
Right. Yeah, you're right. Actually, I'm glad you brought that up. Yeah, because we didn't really discuss that. But she did in the interview where she mentioned how she rewrote a lot of her lines and actually came up with some of the ideas for the kills or the action scenes, you know, because
yeah.
You know, in the script, it probably just said a fight scene and whatever. And then, you know, someone has to actually determine how the fight scene is. And she actually kind of wrote those in some cases. So that was kind of cool.
Yeah. It's pretty neat.
Yeah. So that was a pretty cool to get her on and stuff. All right. So any final things you wanted to bring up about the film or anything that we missed that you wanted to talk about?
I don't think we missed anything. It's definitely a lot of good kills. That's one of, and it, her work in it is very impressive.
That's true. All right, so let's do our final thoughts on the film then. I guess I'll start. I actually really like this film. This film again had pretty smart script writing as we discussed, and tied up a lot of things that otherwise would have made folks, you know, scratch their head in a weaker film. And I also like I said before, that the character was trained for this stuff. It wasn't like just a character that decided to have a montage and become a powerhouse, you know, the second half of the film. So it didn't feel contrived. Well acted, strong performances by a number of folk, including Ellen Holman, but also Matt Passmore. Geraldine Singer as Mama was fantastic. And most of the guys, like Gary Kasper, who played Butch, they all chewed their parts really well. It was a solid all around. High recommend for sure. All right.
Yeah, I really enjoyed this movie. Ellen Holman is definitely a standout. All the things after talking with her that we know that she did on this film, all the work she put into it, she's just very impressive. I look forward to seeing her in many more roles. And the movie itself was really, really well done. I enjoyed it. If you like action flicks, this is definitely a good, like, almost 80s style action flick. But it doesn't feel like it's in the 80s. It's just that style. Revenge flick, action flick. And I highly recommend it. It was very enjoyable.
Now, she mentioned Love and Monsters, and that actually came out late Q4 of this year. So, you know, like November or December, I forget when. But a lot of people are talking about it. Like Mike of the Dark Discussions podcast has that on his list of films that he really liked this year. Have you got to see that yet? Because she's actually one of the leads in that.
I have not, but I need to find it because it sounded good.
Right. I actually think I saw it actually playing at some select theaters too, to be honest.
Really? Wow. That's cool. We have a couple theaters open here that aren't like, they're not the big Regal chains. Like, we have an eater one where you can eat at, and it's opened up and started showing films again. So,
oh yeah. So that's cool. So Love and Monsters, I definitely want to check that out for sure. Other places where people can find this movie here, The Army of One. It's readily available to rent at all the online services. So Apple, Amazon, YouTube, Fandango, Vudu, DirecTV. So you can get that everywhere, the movie anywhere, any of those places for $4.99 basically to rent. And then to buy it, all those places as well sell it for $9.99. So $10. So $5 to rent, $10 to buy for VOD.
Buy it.
This is a $4.99
price, and then I see the $9.99 for buying it, and I'm like, you might as well buy it, then you can watch it as many times as you want.
Yeah, because this is the type of film that you would watch more than once. So,
yeah, and if it's $18.99, that's a huge difference. But if we're talking $5, it's worth buying.
Yeah. In this case, it's only $4 more.
Yeah.
And again, this is December 29th, 2020. So, if you're listening to this in 2023, because again, podcasts are out on the servers forever, basically. This is the price as of 12/29/2020. Also, I did research to see where you can find it on disc, and there's no Blu-ray version of it, but you can find it on Walmart.com, Amazon, Target, Best Buy, any of those places, at least, again, in the United States. And the price is actually standard in all those places. It's $11.99 as a disc. So if you're one of those people that like the artwork and the case, you know, for a buck more, you can actually buy the hard copy of the disc at any of those places. And it's being released by Uncorked Entertainment, which is a pretty good company. And it's definitely worth checking out, whether you rent it or buy it VOD or decide to get the disc. All right, so I guess we can wrap it up. So once again, Army of One, 2020 new film released in Q4 of 2020. Actually, it was a December release. Both me and Barrett like it. So with all that stated, Barrett, why don't you lead us out?
Thanks for joining us on our review of Army of One. Please come back and join us for our next film that we review. Or join us on our Stand podcast.
Yeah, that's right, Barrett. Actually, before we finally wrap it up, let's bring that up. Once again, we're at www.darkdiscussions.com is the network, which is the Dark Discussions Network. And again, if you like me and Barrett and like our format and how we talk and all that, we are doing a Stand podcast. So basically a weekly podcast on the television CBS All Access TV show, The Stand. And that podcast is called Don't Tell Me, I'll Tell You, The Stand Podcast. And again, you can find that podcast wherever podcasts are found. So let's get started.
As a final note on that, the first two episodes are bonus episodes of our podcast for The Stand, where we review The Stand, the book.
Yeah, that's right.
So in the show, we do a review of the book before we even get to the show.
Yeah, absolutely. So definitely check out Don't Tell Me, I'll Tell You, The Stand podcast, because it includes the two extra bonus episodes, which are episodes 1 or 2 of the podcast, which we discussed the novel and whatnot and stuff. So excellent. All right. So Barrett, once again, lead us out.
Thanks for joining us again, and we'll see you next time.